Welcome to the GGB podcast. We're doing another in our series of GGB Live at ICE here in Barcelona. And my guest today is Simon Thomas, the owner of the Hippodrome in London, one of my favorite places in the whole city and one of my favorite casinos in the whole world, as a matter of fact. It's such a quirky little place and a great place to be in London. And Simon, last time you took us on a tour that last ICE last winter, and you had a bunch of new attractions. Explain what they were and how they've been doing since then.
Thank you. I think I'll have you in my marketing department. So thank you for that plug. We are always moving around the place. It's so big, and you said it's little. By British standards, it's huge. It's 80,000 right. square feet. The average British casino is sort of a tenth of that size.
Right.
And we actually have 11% of the UK casino market in one building out of 120 casinos, to give just a sense of scale. In terms of new attractions, we're always changing, we're always chopping, we're always improving, because we can't stand still. And it's really stimulating for the customers when they come in and see something new. It's also really good for the staff. They see you reinvesting, pushing boundaries. The last couple of years, we've opened the Chinese restaurant, which has gone from nothing. It's pretty audacious, actually. Maybe some people would say reckless, opening a Chinese restaurant next to Chinatown when you've got a lot of Chinese customers who are restaurateurs. We partnered with one of them, one of the better groups, called Imperial China. Not Imperial China, what was it about? Royal China. And so we get their quality, but we put our kind of service standards in there. And so it's just brilliant. And
I can attest to that. We ate there last time, and it was incredible.
It's fantastic. Yeah. Robot can be annoying, because it does sing. And it does a good happy birthday now. We trained it. But when we got it, it sang... It's some Thriller, and we didn't know it was a singing robot, and it was just very random. But on TripAdvisor, there are now 121,500 restaurants in London, and it's number 37, which is cool. And when you get people like Sarah Jessica Parker coming in for dinner, it's just brilliant. So that's fantastic. But the latest toy is our secret bar, which is called Archive and Myth, which is actually adjacent to the Chinese restaurant. But the door you go in has 76 touch panels behind it, and you get given the code, and you have to press four panels in the right order, then the door unlocks, and you go down into this subterranean sort of world. It's a little womb of calm and elegance, and the cocktails are joyful to have. I don't even like cocktails, and I will happily go there anytime. And then you can leave there and go straight to the Chinese restaurant. So we're doing things like that all the time. We have got the change in regulations coming up, which are now pretty much sorted. The government have approved it. They've been for what they call right around. They check with other government departments, and there've been no adverse reactions. So we're now waiting for them to write the detail of the legislation and then lay it in Parliament, which should be done by the end of March. Beginning of April, and becomes law in June. That will obviously allow us the 80 slot machines that are long overdue, but also allow us a betting license. And we've got plans to take our gaming room, which we call Lola's, gaming sports bar, and turn it into a much more sophisticated casino sports.
That was a great little sports bar at the bottom of, in the basement of your property there. Wraparound TVs and
That's good. But the bar in there is always, it's always been a bit small. So we're bringing it out of the corner, putting it a third of the way in, double sided, screens all around it, probably inlay some poker terminals, Vegas style. And have a few gaming tables down there, because we need more gaming tables and some of the 80 slot machines.
Right.
So we never stop.
Right. Yeah. I also enjoyed the smoking lounge you have on the top of the property. You can nice views up there, and in the summertime it must be beautiful.
It is stunning. Because I don't know, you go into some rooftop bars, they're too high, and you don't get a sense of where you are. Being on the fifth floor, it's low enough to feel as though it's like Mary Poppins, a roof chimney height. And it's just lovely. You come out of the chaos and maelstrom of Leicester Square, where you've got thousands of people thronging around, and you go up a lift, and you're suddenly in this oasis garden. And it feels lovely. It's actually so good, it's a bit too busy at times, so we have to limit it. And we have just got planning to build out over the entire roof.
Right.
So we'll put another 200 covers up there. And we're just doing the final details with the fire office, and then we should press button on that later this year. So yeah, even things happening up there as well.
And again, your theatre is very intimate. Magic Mike is still performing?
It is a phenomenon. When we agreed to do Magic Mike, we were excited, but we also had some reservations, because you put a show like Magic Mike, which is high energy and predominantly female audience, in a relatively calmer casino with a predominantly male audience. It could either work really well, or it could change the atmosphere negatively. It could jar with the rest of the atmosphere. And what it's done is been revolutionary to the building, because it's added really positive energy. A lot of very happy, excited people. It doesn't conflict with the gaming at all. The crossover onto gaming is pretty low. Crossover onto bars and restaurants is huge. So it's really helped our bar and restaurant operation. Mm-hmm. The show itself is world class. It is an amazing production. There was $6 or $7 million spent in the theatre, and the production quality is it's incomparable to anything else. It's been running now for just over 6 years. It is still full. Had 700,000 people see it. And 10 shows a week, coming up to 2,500 shows, and it's still selling out. So there's an awful lot to like about it. It was on holiday the second week in January, and we really missed it, because it just had been lost, that this extra buzz and thrill and excitement. And the other thing which we hadn't really anticipated was the amount of PR we get out of it is off the chart. We're in the mainstream press all the time. We're on television frequently. Mm-hmm. People refer to it. Magic Mike's now part of the English vernacular. We, like many casinos, struggle with social media, because it's really hard to make people excited on TikTok or Instagram or whatever about casino gambling. But actually, Magic Mike Live at the Hippodrome, 3.1 million followers.
Wow.
I don't know if there's any other social media account for casino that's anywhere near that. And it kind of normalizes the whole experience. Mm-hmm. It makes it more accessible to so many people. And once they're in the building, they've got over that initial hurdle of the sort of intimidation of walking into a casino, and they walk in and go, wow, I was not expecting this. Can I just come back and use the bar? Yes. Can I just come back and use the restaurant? Yes. And so we're getting a really big, strong sort of knock-on effect from it. So there's a lot to like. And even the show, they're constantly developing it, refining the acts, changing them, putting bits in and out. The actors are changing. So people come and see it multiple times.
Well, your building is so historic. I mean, I love when you walk in the front door, there's a history on each side, and you can see all the famous stars that have played there. I mean, it's gone through so many iterations. You feel kind of responsible to kind of uphold that history as you renovate here and there?
I'm just checking my watch, because it opened 125 years and 1 week ago. Yeah. We had our 125th birthday last week. And Lucy Gosling, who wrote the Hippodrome book, came and did a presentation on the history. It is extraordinary for a building. It's most brilliantly located. Every generation has been reinvented. It's been a circus, music hall. It hosted the English premiere of Swan Lake, first jazz ever played in the country, Houdini.
Then a pool in it at one point.
A big swimming pool with dwarfs diving into it. It had the Talk of the Town era, when it was a dinner dance venue, and people like Stevie Wonder, Sammy Davis Jr., Ella Fitzgerald, Tom Jones, Cliff Richard, Judy Garland, and on played there. And then it was the biggest nightclub in the country. And then me. And the trick is, it's not to rely on the history, but to build on it.
Yeah.
And we've tried to bring out some of the history and enjoy it. Our restaurant, the Helio Steakhouse, is named after Claire Helio, who used to feed lions raw steak, where the roulette tables are now, back in 1906. So there's that sort of sense of building on it. But I don't want people to walk in and think, oh, I've just walked into an old theatre. I want people to walk in and go, wow. Yeah. And to other parts of the building, go, wow. And taking the history, building on it, is great. Mm-hmm. And it does have other knock-on effects. When I took Channing Tatum around, when he was inspecting the properties that could have taken Magic Mike live. That we're down to a short list of three or four properties. Because of the history, it gives you really a story to talk to and build on. And when Prince wanted to play in the Hippodrome, because of its history, we were able to bring sort of modern day through the history and then look forward. But we've got to sort of enjoy the heritage, respect the fact that we have been allowed to take on one of London's most iconic buildings, but then build on it so that it can entertain people for generations to come.
Right. And you've expanded as well by buying adjacent buildings.
Yeah, the whole island site, when you look at it from the outside, looks like one big square block. But actually the theatre part of it was about two-thirds of it, and it was inset within the island. And then the building on the front was called Cranbourne Mansions. And that was the shop units down the front with offices above and Victorian gentlemen's flats. And then there was a light well separating that from the theatre. And I got the whole of it, not everything day one, because there were some of the shop units I hadn't controlled, but took the vast bulk of it and then built up a building between the two buildings and took over the main two buildings and knocked them together. And then over the years, as the shop units became available, incorporated them. In fact, the secret bar was the last part of the development to be taken on, because that was a two shop units that didn't survive COVID, and we turned the top half into a cafe, and we had this really cool basement area, so we turned that into the secret bar. So I now control everything in the building, bar, there's some flats down the back, which are another separate building, but it's a beautiful site.
So you're located in the heart of London's theatre district, so I'm assuming you get a lot of visitors there, a lot of tourists. What's your ratio between kind of locals and tourists?
It's what, 15% foreigners. The challenge on that is we're open door, so we can't really nail everybody down. London's incredibly international. But when COVID hit, we then had a very clear indication of how many people were living overseas, and it turned out to be 15%, which is pretty low. They're good spenders. They're people that really add to it, and we are very much on the tourist map. I find it quite humbling when I see people saying top 10 things to see in London: Buckingham Palace, Royal Albert Hall, Madame Tussauds, Hippodrome Casino. I think, whoa! I feel kind of like a precocious upstart.
Yeah.
But we do deliver an incredible experience. And so we had people from 122 countries last year, according to my ATMs. Some of them didn't visit very often, some of the very far-flung ones. But we really welcome tourists, and the change in legislation a few years ago that you don't have to be a member before you can walk in was actually fundamental in the decision to take on the building. But it's also brilliant when you have tourists that can walk in and enjoy the place. And I think a lot of overseas people have casinos which are much more friendly than British casinos, which historically have been quite austere. And they're used to a casino being a place where you can go as a grown-up and they're safe.
Right.
And they've got good bars and good restaurants. So they're already familiar with that concept, sort of the Vegas-style concept. And so we get plenty of them. But the bulk of the business is locals.
Sure.
But everyone's welcome.
So you mentioned the legislation, the regulations are changing due to the white paper. Is that slowed down because of the change of government in the UK or not?
It slowed down briefly. It was supposed to all go through on October the 1st, and there were a range of regulatory changes affecting us and also the street market, the arcades, and a couple of other parts of the gaming market. And new government come in, they put the slide rule over it, and they fast-tracked one or two bits which were to do with responsible gambling, a levy on the industry to get protected funds for research, education, treatment, which is fine, and putting a stake limit on online gaming to £5 per spin, which is the same as we have in a real casino.
Right.
The other measures which were deregulatory affected us and the arcades. They've separated them out now. They've approved the casino side, which is better from our point of view because it de-risks it slightly, and it means they can put their full focus on writing the what's called a statutory instrument. And I had a call with DCMS last week, which is our government department, And they've had clearance from all the government departments. They're now writing the actual regulations and expect to lay them, as it's called, before the House at the end of March, beginning of April. They don't see any hurdles to that, and then it will become law, meaning we can actually have boxes on the floor in late June. That is the timetable that they're working to, and that's when we just started ordering machines around them. And it's going to be great because I get criticism about two things predominantly on social media. One, my doormen, who are apparently they're racist and sexist and homophobic, and the complaints normally go when someone's been turned away for being drunk. Dorma wouldn't let me in. They were rude. Is it because I'm black, white, yellow, gay, or whatever? I'd only had a few pints. No, it's really simple. You'd had too much to drink. Simple as that. Anyway, that I don't mind. But when people complain, call yourself a casino. Why didn't you put more machines in? I'd love to. It's the law. Right. And I've got unhappy customers because they're having to queue to play a product that they want to play in an environment that's designed for that sort of product.
Sure.
I'm not able to satisfy customer demand, I'm not able to keep people happy. When people are on the machines, they are frightened of leaving them because they can't get back on, which isn't good on many respects.
Sure.
And so the change will come through, should be through by the end of June. It'll unlock about a third of a billion investment into British casinos, because it's accompanied with some requirements that to get more machines, you've got to have more non-gaming space, more bars, more restaurants. Some casinos, like mine, we've got plenty of that already. Other casinos will have to expand, will have to invest. And I think it'll be brilliant for the whole industry to see this raft of investment coming in and turn more casinos into the sort of the Hippodrome style. And when you look what's happening in the world, town centres with e-commerce and the shift to, I don't like shopping, I buy on Amazon, my banking I do online. High streets have become derelict in places, and they're being filled by sort of the fun economy, the play zones, the dark rooms, the escape rooms, the competitive socializing. And I think casinos have the ability to be almost an anchor tenant in that, as a big, secure space that's open long hours, supporting that whole ecosystem. So it's a really positive move.
Okay. So you were active in the online gaming market. I remember going in there a few years ago and you had a roulette game that was being broadcast online. Are you still doing that?
Yeah, we're not. We have there is a Hippodrome online gaming site, but it's run by Betway. It's a brand licensing arrangement because I'm really good at doing what I do, which is create incredible experiences for people in a land-based casino. The art of doing online gaming is something that I don't know, and there are people that do it much better than me, so I'll leave them to it. But I do have a great asset in the Hippodrome, and people like the idea of playing on a Hippodrome table.
Right.
So we work with Evolution and have live dealer games where you can actually play a real casino
floor.
Yeah.
Right.
So you're playing a real casino table, and you've got that feeling of probity because you can see that it's there, and you can also go and play the real table.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of mystique about online and offline. They are quite different products.
Right.
One is transactional, one is experiential. But there are some advantages both ways. Online giving offline credibility. Online training people, and actually reducing the intimidation of going to a real casino. When you've learned to play blackjack or learned to play roulette online, it's not such a big hurdle to play it offline.
Right, yeah.
And there's things like that. And we have great stuff with PokerStars, which is our poker partner, where they have online tournaments that finish in offline finals.
Right.
And things like that.
Yeah.
So there's quite some good ways to work together.
So with the maximum bet of £5 now being insisted upon by the government online, and I understand there's some new licensing issues that the online casinos must have. They have to be completely licensed. Doesn't that kind of lean you into the law of unintended consequences, where more illegal gaming would happen at that point?
There's a risk, definitely. I was looking at some figures by YieldSec yesterday, and they estimate that around 70% of gaming in Europe is illegal, unlicensed, untaxed, unregulated. And that's not good. And
no.
I think countries are waking up to the fact that there's a huge amount of lost revenue, and that has been the trigger to make them start taking it a bit more seriously. We've always said if somebody's gaming online, they have got none of the safety measures exactly. that we put in, the money laundering regulation, the probity, the safer gambling measures, and for a lot of people they don't care, mm-hmm. and it's more convenient to play online. And if they play on a legal site, they've got advantages. They don't have all this hassle.
Right.
And they don't have checks on your where your money's coming from, stuff like that. But these online firms, beside the fact they're not contributing to sue society, they are creating problems, the illegal ones. And so finally there is a move to start really tackling it. And I've noticed a change in attitude in the regulators, and it seems to be going worldwide. To start dealing with it, and it's not just sort of shut a website down. They're very clever. They've got 300 or 400 mirror sites for each site. They've right. got systems where it's dynamically changing the website URLs, so there's never actually ever a casino. It's moving around. You can't do the whack-a-mole on it.
Yeah.
But if the regulator gets serious about it, and if the industry gets serious about it, we can certainly make a big impact on it, and we have to address it by attacking every part of the ecosystem. The British regulator recently has taken one of the suppliers to task because some of their products were ending up on online illegal gaming sites.
Mm-hmm.
One of our trade magazines recently has taken a stance by saying we will no longer accept any adverts from companies that are not regulated and licensed. There were sort of adverts advertising Gamban casinos.
Mm-hmm.
I believe G2E is taking a really strong stance saying we will not have anybody on the exhibition floor
right.
who is not 100% legitimate. We really need a charter across industry that says what is and is not allowed. And we need the regulators to really step up the game and tackle it through payment processors, through all of the search engines.
Right.
And all the different measures, and really take it seriously, because it's costing billions of pounds of tax money mm. that's not being spent.
Right.
It's costing people, it's harming people, because they're not being given the protections that they would benefit from in a regulated site. So it's time to really take it seriously and move on it.
Okay. So let's talk about the London casino market. We just recently saw Wynn Resorts purchase the old Aspinalls. I think there was the Crown Casino owned it right after that. Obviously, Wynn has a pejorative, has another idea for that because of their UAE casino they'll open in a few years. Is the London casino market very fluid right now?
It's been through, the high end has been through a really tough time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When we had 6 high end casinos at one point, then COVID hit, yeah. the Chinese stopped traveling, the Arabs stopped traveling, combined with British tax rates, which are 50% of the sort right. of marginal rate at the high end, and the lack of being able to offer players credit.
Mm-hmm.
And 3 of the high end casinos shut.
Yeah.
Crockford's, the Ritz, and the Claremont.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually lovely to see the confidence of Wynn coming in and buying Crown Aspinalls. And that will lead to investment in that neck of the woods. It also recognises London's position being somewhere between the UAE and North America, and quite pivotal in Europe. So I think hopefully the corner's turning on that. The regulators are supportive of high-end having credit for high net worth overseas banked mm. players. They're just waiting for a regulatory opportunity to put that through. The British high-end casinos are magnificent, and they're very good at what they do, and it's it would be a shame to not have that part of the business supported. The sort of mass market, the sort of we're definitely sort of premium mass in many languages. We're not cheap, but we're not the high end. Is going to get a real impetus from this change in regulations to allow us a competitive number of slot machines. But if you actually look in real terms, London's a city of 10, 12 million people. There are 20 casinos or so. If all of them manage to expand to put in 80 machines, you've only got 1,600 casino machines in London. if it was a Virgin site and Wynn or MGM came in and put in a proper Vegas style casino, I'm sure they'd put 4,000 or 5,000 machines in. So we're still not going to touch the surface of demand, but it will make all the casinos much more attractive to customers, more profitable, and it'll be a nice virtual spiral upwards, where investment leads to better properties, leads to more people, leads to more investment.
Sure.
So it's provided everything happens and goes through, and as we've seen with politics, things can change very quickly. But provide everything goes through, we're looking pretty good.
That's for sure. Well, Simon, it's great to catch up with you. I'm sorry it's not in London. I love being in London. It's so nice here in Barcelona, but next time I'm in London, we'll definitely come by the Hippodrome again.
You're always welcome. You know that. We look forward to having you back in London.
Great. Thanks for the time.
To read more about the topic presented in this week's podcast, visit ggbmagazine.com. To subscribe to GGB's executive summary, go to ggbnews.com and sign up. Don't miss any edition of the GGB podcast. Subscribe on Spotify, Amazon, or Apple Podcasts today. So we'll see you next time on the GGB podcast.